This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisin, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 72 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm not going to lie, guys. I have a ton to talk about this week with a lot of really high-profile names. I really just want to get to these transactions. But before doing so, I wanted to let you know that Daniel Miracle Man Jacobs returns to headline HBO World Championship Boxing in an explosive middleweight showdown against undefeated Luis Arias. It's going down live Saturday, November 11th at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on HBO. But seriously, guys, I just want to dig into these transactions. It's a really, really fun week for this show. So let's do it. By Kareem Hunt. So I posted a Twitter poll yesterday, and it looks as though most people view Kareem Hunt right now more as a mid RB1. They don't see Kareem Hunt as a top-tier running back anymore in fantasy football. Maybe this has to do with recency bias. Kareem Hunt now has back-to-back down games. But even if that's the case, it doesn't matter. That's how folks are viewing Kareem Hunt right now. Hunt's week 9 was seriously troublesome. He played only 54% of the team snaps. That was the lowest snap rate of his season. And it was the first time that he was on the field for fewer than 70% of the team snaps since week 4. And as a result, he carried the ball just 9 times. How that happens, I have no idea. Basically, over the last couple of weeks, Hunt has not performed in fantasy football. He hasn't done what we saw him do earlier this season. And probably the biggest thing that owners are annoyed with are the lack of touchdowns. He hasn't scored since week 3. But guys, I mentioned this last week on the Mailbag show. The Chiefs haven't exactly been in great scoring situations for Kareem Hunt this year. Despite averaging almost 27 points per game during this time where Kareem Hunt hasn't found the end zone, the Chiefs have run just 19 plays from within the opponent's 10-yard line. That's fewer than 19 other NFL teams, and the Chiefs still haven't had their bye. Meaning we would expect them to just naturally rank higher because they have an extra game played than a lot of other teams. And they've only run 7 goal line plays. That's within the opponent's 5-yard line. That's the third lowest number in the NFL. That's kind of crazy, to be honest. Scoring that many points and rarely having an opportunity close to the goal line is not normal. And we should expect some regression. And we shouldn't assume week 9 happens again too. The fear for Kareem Hunt is that a negative game script hits because that'll force Charkhandrick West onto the field. That's how the Chiefs are using Kareem Hunt and Charkhandrick West. But fortunately, after the bye this week, Kansas City will face the Giants, Bills, Jets, Raiders, Chargers, and Dolphins. The Chiefs could end up being favored in each of those games, and each of those teams ranks outside the top 10 in fantasy points allowed to the running back position this year. Bottom line is, Kareem Hunt should still be considered a top 5 running back from here on out. And with the Chiefs on a bye this week, it could be a time to purchase him for a price that's lower than what he should be bought for. Sell DeAndre Hopkins. You know, I've been kind of shocked by the analysis that's surrounding DeAndre Hopkins after his game against the Colts this past week. I get it, he performed. He saw 16 targets, and volume does equate to fantasy football success. But guys, we've been down this road with DeAndre Hopkins before. And that's part of the reason, just part of it, why he's a sell this week. 16 targets is amazing, I get it, but ignoring the quality of those targets doesn't make much sense. Not only did he catch just 6 of those 16 targets, but he did so against arguably the league's worst secondary that was without the unit's top cornerback and other pieces in that secondary. Last year, DeAndre Hopkins was a volume-hoarding wide receiver, and he didn't really do much with it. In 2016, he hit double-digit targets in 6 fantasy-relevant games, that excludes Week 17. And in those contests, he ranked higher than 17th in weekly PPR scoring at the wide receiver position once. One time. And the other piece to this transaction is that his fantasy playoff schedule is awful. In week 15, that Texans offense is going to face the league's best secondary in Jacksonville. And then in week 16, they get another good secondary against Pittsburgh. If you're locked into a playoff spot right now or things are looking good for your squad, I would be looking to see what I could get for DeAndre Hopkins. Especially if I can pair him with another player and upgrade that spot to someone like Antonio Brown. Add Devontae Booker. Denver is lost. Denver looks horrendous. Denver looks terrible. But lost in that beatdown that they just took in Philadelphia is the fact that Devontae Booker is seeing more volume in this offense. He's now played 34% of Denver's snaps in each of his last 2 games, and in both of those contests, he's carried the ball 6 times while seeing 3 targets through the air. He's seen identical volume numbers over the last 2 games. Now, this may be one of those situations where Devontae Booker just simply hurts CJ Anderson more than he's a standalone value himself. But at this point in the season, he's not a bad bench stash, especially with teams like the Patriots, Raiders, Dolphins, Jets, and Colts upcoming. By Michael Thomas. Now look, guys, it's always important to put things into context. I talk about that all the time on these podcasts. You can be mad at a certain player's performance, but if you don't have any context for why that player is performing the way he does, you have no right to be mad. You have to put it into context. You have to see why these things are happening. So with Michael Thomas, is he having the season that we thought that he'd have? Definitely not. I mean, the dude only has 2 touchdowns through 8 games. Last year, he scored 9 and he was a rookie. Now, with that being said, that 9 number, those 9 touchdowns were bound to regress a bit. But they weren't going to regress this far. They've regressed too far. Over the last 6 years, a player with 545 receiving yards, which is what Michael Thomas has, would be expected to have roughly 3.36 receiving touchdowns based on simple regression analysis. Again, Michael Thomas only has 2. That's a 1.36 touchdown difference. But he also has Drew Brees throwing him the ball, so that number should be even higher. So we should expect, just based on simple math, for Michael Thomas to have a better touchdown rate moving forward than what he's had this season. And there's a lot of good surrounding Michael Thomas's situation. According to airyards.com, Michael Thomas is seeing 40% of the Saints' air yards this season. That's tied for the 4th highest share in all of football. And also this season, he's seen a 26.74% target market share. That's another top 10 number. And then on top of this, the Saints have a pretty intriguing fantasy playoff schedule this year. They're going to go up against the Falcons in Week 14, the Jets in Week 15, and then the Falcons again in Week 16. According to NumberFire's schedule-adjusted metrics, those are 2 bottom 10 pass defenses. By Michael Thomas. Add Danny Woodhead and sell Buck Allen. So Danny Woodhead resumed practicing last week, and he's eligible to return to the field in Week 11. So that should put him on your fantasy football radar, because even without Danny Woodhead this year, Baltimore ranks in the top half of the league in running back receptions per game. And with Woodhead back in the mix, Buck Allen, who's a sell here, may, and I stress the word may, become pretty irrelevant in fantasy football. The majority of Buck Allen's value comes via the air, and if Danny Woodhead is there, that value might just go away. This season, though, Buck Allen is 4th among running backs in total targets, and he has a target market share that's north of 16%. Buck Allen's been great as a Danny Woodhead replacement. My general fear with this, though, is that the Ravens' offense is just going to be a mess. There's going to be this giant running back rotation that we want nothing to do with. But Woodhead's one of the best receiving backs in all of football, and if he's deemed healthy, I'd want him on my fantasy squad at least as a stash, and definitely in PPR formats. Add Charles Clay. So I mentioned Clay last week on this podcast, noting that he would be returning to action pretty soon, and that when he's been active this season, he's averaged over 6 targets per game. That's not bad at all for a tight end. And it looks as though that Clay could be ready as early as this week to play, which would be huge for fantasy owners and the Bills offense. Because not only is the tight end position a giant pile of flaming dog you know what, but Buffalo has a great rest of season schedule, guys. They're going to face New Orleans, Kansas City, Indianapolis, Miami, and New England twice. So snag Clay this week before it's too late. Sell Adrian Peterson. You know, it's been a very boom or bust 3 games for Adrian Peterson as an Arizona Cardinal. But 2 of those 3 contests were booms. Since Peterson became a Cardinal, he's led the NFL in carries and rushing yards. That's quite the feat for someone who was written off just a little over a month ago. But here's the thing. Peterson's had 2 games where the perfect storm has happened. I talked about this after the Bucs game when it happened, but the same thing happened with San Francisco. When he went nuts against Tampa Bay back in Week 6, Arizona at one point had a 24-0 lead. They were in a massive positive game script against a bad defense. And then this week, they faced one of the league's worst rush defenses in yet another positive game script. Things worked out for Adrian Peterson as a result. During his lone down week, the one where he went up against the Rams, the Cardinals lost Carson Palmer, and Adrian Peterson played just 53% of the team's snaps. His snap rates in his 2 good games are 74% and 77%. Game script matters, and it will matter for Adrian Peterson. You know, if Carson Palmer were still healthy, I might feel a lot more confident in this Cardinals offense and in Adrian Peterson, because there might be more positive game scripts. But without Carson Palmer, I can't feel nearly as confident that scoring opportunities and a run-first offense will exist. You know, teams can say, we want to be run-heavy, but you can't always just be run-heavy. Game flow has to go in your favor. So right now, if you can trade Adrian Peterson away for a significant value, which you may be able to do because of his name value and his performance this past week, go for it. Buy Mohamed Sanu. So I talked about this with Michael Thomas, but the Falcons will face the Saints in two of their three fantasy playoff matchups this season. And in week 15, the Falcons are going to face the Bucks. Those are some solid matchups for a slot receiver like Mohamed Sanu, who, according to Pro Football Focus, has run about 65% of his routes from the slot this season. And so far this season, we've seen players like Larry Fitzgerald and Danny Amendola do some serious work from the slot against Tampa Bay, and Golden Tate and Chris Hogan did some work against the Saints in the slot. And even regardless of these very specific matchups, all three of those games could feature a lot of scoring. And that alone is good for Mohamed Sanu. He's also been pretty involved in the offense since returning from injury 3 weeks ago. He has 20 targets, which is good for a 20% target market share. And I want to let it be known right now that the Falcons' offense really isn't as bad as some people think. Some people think that they're just a mediocre offense. Guys, they're second in the NFL in yards per drive, they're eighth in scoring rate per drive, and they're 10th in touchdown rate per drive. Let's not pretend that Mohamed Sanu is just part of some average offense. Add Robert Woods. Bobby Woods has now seen four or more targets in each game this year, averaging about a 20% target market share in that team's offense. The unfortunate part is that Cooper Kupp has been the main man in the red zone. He leads the league with 15 red zone targets. But just one third of Kupp's targets have come within the 10-yard line. Woods actually only has two fewer targets than Cooper Kupp does within the opponent's 10-yard line. That's not that bad. And here's the thing too with Robert Woods. Los Angeles has a couple of tough matchups upcoming, but some of them are against teams with top shadow corners. They're going to face Xavier Rhodes and Patrick Peterson. Those two guys might be on Sammy Watkins, which will leave Robert Woods with softer coverage. So I think that we should expect to see this high PPR floor for Robert Woods moving forward, and he's not a bad add off the waiver wire as a flex. Hold Devontae Freeman. During the first four games of the season, Devontae Freeman scored at least one touchdown in each of those contests. Over the last four, he scored zero. In those first four games, in this split, he saw 17.5 carries per game. Over the last four, he's seen 11 per game. Things are not going all that well for Devontae Freeman. But during the first four games, the Falcons were also 3-1. And during the last four, they're 1-3. And during those first four games when they were a winning team, they had a 1.29 pass to rush attempt ratio. Over the last four, that's risen to 1.52. That's not a shock. When you're a losing team, naturally you're going to have to throw more. And here's the thing, when looking at the first four games versus the last four games in this split, when the game has been at plus or minus 7 points, so a neutral game script, the Falcons have basically the exact same pass to rush ratio, 1.41 versus 1.40. So when they're in a neutral script, nothing's really changed, meaning this negative game script and this 1-3 record has indeed been a detriment to Devontae Freeman. That's especially true at the goal line. Devontae Freeman was second in the NFL in attempts from within his opponent's 5-yard line from weeks 1-4. He had 8 of them. But he hasn't seen a single goal line carry over the last four games. While the Falcons have been losing, Devontae Freeman has not seen any love at the goal line. But the Falcons have also gone from 15 plays run at the goal line over the first 4 weeks to 8 over the last 4 weeks. They're not providing the same type of opportunities for Devontae Freeman. Here's the thing that's concerning for me, though. Devontae Freeman, during those first four games, had about a 67% rushing attempt market share. Over the last four games, it's below 50%. And teammate Tevin Coleman went from about a 28% rushing attempt market share to a 38% one in and out of the split. And then all the while, Devontae Freeman is playing the same number of snaps. I know that's a lot of information to take in. I get it. I just brain vomited on all of you. But what this is saying is that the Falcons have been more pass heavy during this losing streak, while they've been 1-3. And that's naturally just hurt Devontae Freeman. But the one piece that's hurt him more, or just as much, is that they are giving Tevin Coleman more love in that backfield. But even still, Devontae Freeman is playing the same number of snaps. So it's a really interesting situation here. So we have to ask, why are they giving Tevin Coleman more love in that backfield? Maybe it's because of the, this is fine, don't worry about it, shoulder injury that Devontae Freeman has. Maybe that has something to do with it. Or maybe it's that they want to just keep Devontae Freeman's legs fresh. Because this split, the first four games versus the last four games, happened with a bye in between. Maybe the staff got together and said, we need to use Tevin Coleman more. But regardless of the true reason, I think that that's the biggest worry for Devontae Freeman right now. If Devontae Freeman continued with his attempt share, I would be buying Devontae Freeman right now. I think that he would be a buy candidate. But because Tevin Coleman's digging in a little bit more, we should be somewhat cautious when it comes to Devontae Freeman. So I guess the question is, why should you hold Devontae Freeman and not sell him? Well, like I noted with Mohamed Sanu, he has a really nice fantasy playoff schedule. And we've seen Devontae Freeman with an elite running back ceiling. And giving up on that because of a four-game stretch probably isn't all that wise. You'd be selling Devontae Freeman low. I think things will kind of return to the middle of the first 4 weeks and the last 4 weeks. We probably won't see Devontae Freeman's first 4 weeks again this season. That's fine, but I don't think that we're going to continue to see what we've seen over the last 4 weeks either. So if you own Devontae Freeman, hold Devontae Freeman. Add Curtis Samuel. So the answer to the who's going to see the biggest uptick in snaps with Kelvin Benjamin out of the picture in Carolina is, unsurprisingly, Curtis Samuel. In week 9, Curtis Samuel actually played the most snaps of any wide receiver in Carolina. He played one more snap than Devin Funchess. In turn, he saw 5 targets. That might not seem like a lot, but Cam Newton only threw the ball 24 times. Curtis Samuel was one of 3 players to catch a pass for Carolina. So I think that he's a worthwhile stash, a worthwhile guy to add, and see if his role develops into something in Carolina this season. Sell T.Y. Hilton. Guys, I love T.Y. Hilton. I think T.Y. Hilton is a great football player. The problem with T.Y. Hilton is not T.Y. Hilton. The problem is everything going on outside of T.Y. Hilton within the Colts offense. Look, T.Y. Hilton balled out against the Texans in week 9. But like I've been saying, let's put this into context. Let's look at what this all means. This is only the 3rd usable game for T.Y. Hilton all season long. And his other 2 big performances came against 2 very beatable secondaries in San Francisco and Cleveland. His average stat line against a not very good Texans secondary, the San Francisco secondary, and the Cleveland secondary is 9 targets per game, a little over 6 receptions, 168 yards, and 1 touchdown. He is torching bad secondaries. Against everyone else, which includes teams like Jacksonville and Cincinnati, Hilton's average line has been 5.42 targets, 2.14 receptions, 28 yards, and 0 touchdowns. T.Y. Hilton is worse than a waiver wire wide receiver when he's not facing a terrible secondary. And unfortunately, the only plus matchup remaining for the Colts and Hilton is a game against the Titans, but even that brought just a single catch for 19 yards for Hilton back in week 6. Otherwise, Hilton still has Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Buffalo, Denver, and Baltimore. You might not be able to find a tougher way to finish the season as a wide receiver. Add Josh McCown. So we're still seeing really low ownership for Josh McCown in fantasy football when he's averaging more fantasy points per game than Marcus Mariota, Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan, and Derek Carr. He's now thrown a touchdown pass in all but 2 games this year, and one of those contests came against the Jags. And the Jags secondary has only allowed 4 passing touchdowns all season long. And Josh McCown gets the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this week. They've been torched by almost every quarterback they've faced. In fact, every quarterback that they've faced have ranked in the top 15 in weekly quarterback scoring, except for Mike Glennon and somehow Tom Brady. But we'll give Tom Brady a pass because it was a Thursday night football game. When adjusted for strength of schedule, Number Fire's numbers see Tampa Bay as a bottom 5 secondary. That makes Josh McCown a really nice option off the waiver wire this week. Hold Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones put together his absolute worst performance of the season on Monday night for the Packers. He ran the ball just 5 times. He had 12 yards. He did see 5 targets through the air, but he only caught 2 of them for negative yardage. It was a very rough performance for Aaron Jones. But it was also a rough performance for the entire Green Bay offense. It felt like quarterback Brent Hundley didn't know how to throw the ball across the line of scrimmage. It was so ugly to watch. It was terrible, and it's ruined the fantasy value for almost everyone in that offense. And unfortunately for Aaron Jones owners specifically, he started the game. He was getting the most run in that backfield to start the game. But the offense was so ineffective, they throw Ty Montgomery out there. Ty Montgomery ends up outproducing him and outsnapping him in that Monday night game. And then Jamal Williams trolled everyone at the end of the game and he scored a touchdown. Aaron Jones, according to our numbers at NumberFire, has been by far the most superior running back on that team this season. In fact, in the small sample size that we have, heading into week 9, he was one of the most effective backs in the entire league. He had about a 53% success rate, when usually success rates for running backs are under 40%. But sadly, this offense without Aaron Rodgers is an absolute mess. and it's impacting everyone. And the fear for me is that Green Bay will have a knee-jerk reaction and truly make this a committee when the thought going into this week was that this was Aaron Jones' backfield. Why wouldn't it be? Aaron Jones was balling out. But the issue in fantasy football is that you can't just sell him. You can't say, I'm going to sell Aaron Jones, an unknown commodity, after he has 5 rushes for 12 yards against the Lions. And most owners in fantasy football aren't going to know that Aaron Jones was actually a pretty strong prospect with incredible college production. You can't sell Aaron Jones right now. You just have to hold on tight and hope that this was not the signal for the end of Jones as a lead back in 2017. Unfortunately, as a big Aaron Jones truther, I'm not that optimistic. Add the New York Giants defense. I get it, guys. The Giants defense is terrible. And I know how inconsistent they've been. I know how awful they've been. But this transaction is entirely based on that Week 10 matchup against San Francisco. Because the 49ers have been that bad offensively. We've now seen 3 games where CJ Beathard has started. In those games, opposing defenses are averaging 4.67 sacks, 12 quarterback hits, an interception, and 1.33 fumble recoveries per game. They're averaging almost 5 sacks per game. Each defense that the 49ers have gone up against during this time have finished as a top 5-1 in weekly defensive scoring in fantasy football. That should give the G-men some sort of floor this week. And they're probably almost definitely on your waiver wire. Add Marquise Goodwin. As I do each week, I have a 16th transaction to give you guys, the listeners, that I don't write in my 15 transactions column. And this week's is to add Marquise Goodwin. Pierre Garçon's season is over. The 49ers have very, very little left at wide receiver. Marquise Goodwin is their top guy. He saw 8 targets on Sunday. He caught just 2 of them for 68 yards, but he also saw Patrick Peterson. San Francisco does have some tough matchups on the schedule upcoming, but Goodwin's a speedster who has a really strong air yards profile. I think that he could be a flex play every once in a while moving forward. With that being said, if you guys don't mind, I want to add a really quick 17th transaction. If Mike Evans' suspension holds this week, Chris Godwin should be on your radar off the waiver wire. He's going to draw a very good matchup, and he should see a lot of run if Mike Evans is indeed sidelined. That's it for today's show, though, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. Also, don't forget to leave a rating and review on iTunes. At the end of the month, one random reviewer will win a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Feel free to follow me. If you have any questions for this week's mailbag show, feel free to send them to jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you on Thursday.